the crunch of the pandemic, we saw a wave of resignations. Small businesses struggled to keep up with the labor shortage. Workers from teachers to baristas went on strike. And for the first time in 5 years, the Massachusetts minimum wage stayed stagnant this year, after hitting $15 an hour in 2023. I'm Jennifer Smith, and this is The Codcast, Commonwealth Beacon's podcast about policy and civic life here in Massachusetts. Today, I'm joined by Enid Eckstein with the Raise Up Mass Coalition, which is pushing for a state minimum wage of $20, which would be the highest minimum wage in the country if their legislative effort is successful. Now, Massachusetts is roughly on par with similarly progressive states. Think Washington, Oregon, New York, California, with high costs of living and decades-long efforts to raise the wage. All but 13 states guarantee higher wages than the $7.25 an hour required by the federal government, mostly in the low teens. And the politics are tangled. In Massachusetts, a living wage is rapidly approaching double our current rate. But rough revenue projections, plus the strain of the pandemic, means many employers say they just can't stomach a hike. So keep state competitiveness in mind, and let's get into it. Enid, thanks so much for being here and joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're talking mostly about the new push for a higher minimum wage today, but folks might be familiar with Raise Up because of its work on the Fair Share Amendment, also known as the Millionaire's Tax, depending on the terminology you prefer. So let's start easy so our listeners know where you're coming from specifically. What's Raise Up Massachusetts and what are the priority areas?
So Raise Up Massachusetts is a coalition of approximately 150 organizations, labor, community, faith-based, and was formed in 2013 with the goal of building an economy that works for everyone, that invests in families, gives everyone the ability to succeed, and advances the needs of working families. And over the years, we've had quite the track record. We've won a number of major improvements for working families in Massachusetts. We did paid family medical leave, paid sick time. We've increased the minimum wage once, and then we increased it again. So we have a really good track record. And as you mentioned, last year, we were able to pass the Fair Share Amendment, which basically provides transformative change for Massachusetts, because we have created a fairer tax system in a state that had a very unfair tax system. And we passed the surcharge on incomes over $1 million, with that money being constitutionally dedicated to transportation infrastructure and public education. And we're already beginning to see the positive benefits of this program. We now have free school lunches, we have money going to community colleges, and we also have money going to public transportation. And as a Boston resident, we have a long way to go to fix our transit system.
But I appreciate it all.
So let's dive in a bit on the minimum wage issue. So Massachusetts didn't raise the minimum wage this year because the so-called grand bargain signed by Governor Baker, after years of advocacy, of course, ran from 2018 to 2023. So as a primer, what have the last 5 years looked like in terms of a gradual increasing minimum wage?
So over the last few years, it's gone up
$1.25 each year.
So as you said, we reached $15 and then it was frozen. Because that was part of the initial bargain that was passed. So now we have, it's now 2023. Had we been successful and had it tied to inflation, basically people in Massachusetts should be earning $18 an hour. So what we've seen is that, yes, that minimum wage did increase, but the pace of inflation and the basic cost of necessities of a working family, whether it be housing, whether it be food, whether it be cost of childcare, has just really skyrocketed and wages have not kept up with it. And it's ironic that, you know, we like to pride ourselves in Massachusetts, how great we are. But even Connecticut now is ahead of us, and many other states are, you know, moving, you know, ahead of us. So that is where the push for minimum wage is. And it comes from the fact that because we work with low-wage workers, we work with breadwinners who are struggling to keep up, that, you know, we saw that there was a need to come back and once again push to increase minimum wage. And hopefully this time, if we're successful, it is also going to be indexed to inflation going forward, because we don't want to come back every year or every 4 years. It's a lot of work. And what we really need is systemic change, just like the Fair Share Amendment was about transformative change. we really need to have a way that wages are tied to changes in the economy.
So I'm glad you brought up Connecticut because to sort of situate people here, we're at $15 an hour now, but there's sort of two ways to think about how we compare to other states, right? There's the literal dollar amount, which is how does $15 an hour compare to other states? And then there's the question of, relatively speaking, what does it mean to make $15 in Massachusetts as opposed to what does it mean to make $15 in, let's say one of my other home states of Utah. So kind of walk us through both of those analyses. $15 kind of on its own, and then what does that actually mean when you're calculating cost of living?
So $15 is minimum wage, but we, also know that the cost of living far exceeds that. We like to quote the MIT Living Wage Indicator that actually says that for a single person working full time, they would have to make $27.89 per hour to be able to support himself or herself. A family, a couple with one child, would have to earn $28.38 per person to be able to support themselves. And when we say support themselves, to have food on the table, to have health insurance, to have transportation, and to basically provide for the cost of housing. So minimum wage is really the bottom. And basically, we would love to win $27 an hour, but I feel like mass raise up. We also know, that we're working within the legislative framework, so that going from 15 to 20 and then going to inflation after that, would be an important victory for working families in Massachusetts. So $15 in Massachusetts sounds like a lot, but when you compare it to the cost of living in one of the more expensive states, and the cost of housing has skyrocketed, whether it's Boston, Springfield, Worcester, or any of the other communities, we're not talking about teenagers. We're talking about families struggling. And it's so ironic that in the pandemic, we held up the example of essential workers, people who provided childcare, people who provided personal care, people who, did the work in the supermarkets. And yet we can't show them the dignity they need to give them a decent living standard and a decent wage. To me, that is just, such a sad statement about our economy.
And how are we thinking about the sort of flip side here, even though obviously you don't necessarily want to put it in combative terms, but the question of, if the minimum wage goes up, somebody has to pay that higher minimum wage. So a lot of the pushback is often coming from the place of, well, that would either have an unduly difficult or onerous impact on a business, or, the broader situation with the Massachusetts economy means that suddenly everything would either shut down or people would have to leave. So, how are you thinking about the impact of a higher minimum wage as it pertains to the employers?
Well, let's try to unpack that because you asked a number of questions there. So the first question is, what is the impact on raising minimum wage in terms of the economy in Massachusetts? So I don't have crystal ball. I wish I did. But if we look at the period from 2014 to 2023, when minimum wage rose steadily, the state added 250,000 jobs. And unemployment dipped from 5.8% to 2.5% in July of 2023. So our state did not suffer at all. In fact, our economy expanded during that period. Then the second issue about competitiveness. Well, what does a competitive economy mean? If it's about, like, am I going to be the race to the bottom? Or is this about how people survive? If you want to have employees who are loyal, if you want to have employees and not spend Employers worry about turnover. Like, look at healthcare, incredible amount of turnover, or some other low-wage jobs, because people don't stay in those jobs because they're always looking to go for the higher wage. So if you want to be competitive, you have to pay decent wages. You have to be able to have a childcare system. You have to be able to have a school system. You have to be able to have restaurants. And then you have to be able to have workers put money back in the economy. It's like if somebody's not making money, they're not putting money in the economy. They're not going and buying that pizza or that burrito. So, this is about how do we raise the standard of everything, of everybody. And Massachusetts has a really serious problem of wage inequity. We have a lot of very wealthy people, which is great, but we have a lot of people who are very poor. And that wage inequity, is definitely a problem. The Fair Share Amendment tried to deal with some of this, but we really need to raise wages. And I think the other thing about competitiveness is you look at the study that the Chamber of Commerce just came out with in Boston, where a large, I think a quarter of people in their 20s and 30s want
Yeah, it
it
was
to
the
be
young people study.
young people. Well, I'm older, but I have a daughter in that age range. And, I just think about like, we cannot have an economy that doesn't have young people wanting to stay here. And, the cost of living is one of the reasons that young people are choosing to leave here, even though they love the city. And so, we need to be thinking about that. And the other thing is, I look at examples where the governor is subsidizing low-wage workers because they can't fill these positions, childcare and mental health workers. What does that say? And we're not providing enough, funding. I mean, it's great that there's subsidies for some of these positions to get people into them, but there's something wrong inherently about the structure. And I guess the last thing I'd say about competitiveness is I want money coming back into my economy, like the Massachusetts economy. It shouldn't go to pay these inflated CEO salaries and to go into the profits of multinationals. It really needs to like stay in our community. And by staying in our community, it means that, the people who serve that hamburger at McDonald's or, wait on me at Dunkin' Donuts or whatever should be able to be earning a decent wage that can help support themselves or their families.
So one thing that I'd like to dive in on quickly that you mentioned was whether or not workers will stay in a job that isn't making that kind of essential wage cut. And so the pandemic illustrated this for a lot of people. We saw, I think it was the Great Resignation, was how folks were referring to it. So thinking back to just the last 2 or 3 years, what kind of labor trends have you been looking at that seem to either make the case for raising it specifically to 20 or raising it to accommodate a certain kind of change in the economic conditions that these workers are experiencing?
Well, I'm not an economist and I'm not a labor economist, so it's more anecdotal. But I noticed that UMass did a study in 2020, which was very interesting because it said that low-wage workers are basically unable to meet basic needs, and they're more likely to face food insecurity, and that this is especially true among African American and Latino workers. And women workers. And if we were to raise minimum wage, it would be a huge boost to a large part of our economy. I think there'd be about 1 million workers who could potentially benefit from that. So, yes, I think people jump from jobs when there's like an employer's offering $1 an hour more or whatever. And you look if you drive, like if you got onto Cape Cod, you see these signs of desperation that employers are looking for work. So we obviously have shortages in a lot of these jobs, and you have employers wasting a lot of money on replacement costs. If you look at what the replacement costs on jobs are, sometimes it's like 1.5 times, the cost. So as I said, I'm not a labor economist, but I know a lot of, these industries that are low wage, especially human service, childcare, healthcare, we need to do something because this is not just about stability. This is about good service. When you go into a healthcare institution, or you have, like I have a grandson in childcare, I want to know that those childcare workers are going to be there and they are at the place my daughter goes to, uses. But it's just really important that we have stability and we actually honor these jobs with decent wages.
So where's the 20 coming from? What's the thinking behind the actual approach this time around when, of course, you're citing other studies saying, well, reasonably in Massachusetts, it should maybe be higher than that. So where are we landing on these numbers?
Well, I think what we looked at was 20 was a good even number. There was a fight for 15 in this country that, caught on across the country, and there was a movement behind it. I think that in many states, people are now looking at can we get to 20? So I think that's where it came from. I don't remember, where that magic number comes from. I do think that if we had an inflation, at the time, we would be at 18 now. And in 3 years, we'd be close to 20. So it's not that far off. Yes, love to use living wage, would love to get there. But I would say that one of the strengths of Raise Up is that we've been able to actually win something. and to do so and capture the imagination, but also work through the political process. So we're balancing the reality of what we need versus and our ability to organize, as well as the ability to try to move something through the legislature.
And there's a few different routes that you can try and use to reach these ends. Of course, if you're thinking about the Fair Share Amendment, that was a ballot initiative. The minimum wage has tended to be more on the legislative side. Right now, there is a ballot question and a ballot campaign looking at tipped wages changes on top of minimum wage. So I guess let's start there, which is. Is the tipped wages ballot measure factoring into the push for 20 at all, or are those happening kind of in different universes?
I would say parallel play in the sense that, we had our, campaign, before, and we included tip workers, but there's always been a coalition that's been organizing, One Fair Wage, and they have their campaign. So, assuming that, they're on the ballot, we believe that Massachusetts voters will obviously have the opportunity to put their opinion out and, so be it. And that would supersede anything we're doing on our legislation. Our legislation follows, our parallel of how we did it last time. But, assuming that there's a campaign around one fair wage, we'll evaluate where that goes also. But, you asked, politically, right now we're working, through the legislative process. We've been gearing up and gathering, co-sponsors. And one of the points that we've been making is that legislatures really need to understand the urgency. They need to understand the crisis that exists for low-wage workers. Many legislators, that's not who, they necessarily are or necessarily understand. But what we've tried to do both in hearings and through individual meetings is to really get them to understand the, just the crisis of affordability and, whether it's housing costs, whether it's food insecurity. And so we've been, gathering up co-sponsors for our legislation, and I'd like to think we have some momentum in the legislature. Can I guarantee that we're passing it in this session? I have no crystal ball, but we definitely have some energy and excitement about trying to push.
And how is the broader economic structure of Massachusetts striking you right now? Of course, we know that we're in kind of a difficult revenue situation. The tax revenues are not where the state would like them to be. We're in the middle of budget season right now. So several programs that folks had been hoping would be funded again are looking a bit more vulnerable, specifically because of the overall revenue situation. So, how is the sort of economic health of the state factoring into what's both an economic question of what the minimum wage should be, but also kind of a question of livability, a kind of more human calculation as well. So, how is that factoring into the push for 20?
Well, livability for many people is really on the edge. Whether you're, a Starbucks barista, whether you're a healthcare worker. So I think that for many people, the larger trends are not something they follow. They follow, can I make my car payment? Can I deal with the rent increase? And we're hoping for some, action from the legislature. So I think that a lot of the workers we deal with, the big trends are big trends, and they might not even necessarily read it. They absorb the hits. They absorb the hits in the sense of they live in a district where, after school programs are limited, or they can't get their kid into childcare, or so I'm not really sure how to answer that question, because, we're the ones who care about the big economy, and we might be debating it like, we're certainly looking at the budget. We were not, we won the Fair Share Amendment and then saw tax cuts come for, wealthier people. So I think the moral of our story is you win, but you have to keep fighting and you have to keep organizing and mobilizing to be able to make sure that we do have a fairer and just economy.
And speaking of that kind of continuous cycle of pushes to get the minimum wage up, thinking now about what is this, the third pass at moving this up to a specific number, what are some of the areas of pushback or conflict that have come up during previous cycles that you anticipate might also be an issue this time around?
Well, certainly there is, the business lobby that will cry, oh my gosh, this is the end of the world. And you know, there are certain industries that, you know, obviously operate more on a tighter margin. So yes, we would expect that some small businesses would say that. But you know, I feel like it's often the child who cried wolf too many times, because while that might be their fear, the experience is very different. The experience has been that the Massachusetts economy did not shut down. The Massachusetts economy thrived. But at the same time, for people who were on the lower ends, you know, of the economy, they got further and further behind. They're on the treadmill. They're the little hamsters on the wheel who really would love for that wheel to slow down and get off so they can invest in their own futures. But, you know, that's not where they're at. And so I would say we would expect a lot of the same debates. But when we did minimum wage the last couple of times, we had, you know, definitely had a number of small business people who came forward and said, wait a minute, this is about how I create and hold my staff, how I had loyalty, how I have, you know, I've invested in my people who are working for me. So, you know, I think for every person who's going to cry wolf, there are people who, you know, can come forward and talk about the importance of this to long-term stability. Because if you look at it, you know, like you have a small pizza business in my neighborhood or something. Well, who's working there? Somebody in the neighborhood. That's putting money back. They may not put their money back in that pizza place, but they're putting money back into the other institutions in our community. And that's, you know, I feel like for Raise Up, this is about keeping money in our communities and not inflating somebody's CEO pay.
What is the thinking about going the legislative route right after, you know, the Fair Share Amendment in terms of your coalition's perspective was a success? That's obviously not a consistent view, depending on how people felt about, for instance, the last round of tax breaks. But from your perspective, that was a success. So why not go with another ballot push? Why go through the legislature?
Well, we went to the legislature because we feel that's a good place to start. And we know change does not come because we snap our fingers and we ask the legislature to do things. It comes because we organize, we mobilize, we get the petition signatures, we're out talking to people in the community. So, you know, we're pushing to have some action taken in this session. And we're optimistic that we have more support. And, you know, we have close to a majority in the House and Senate in terms of co-sponsors. But am I confident that we're going to pass something? You know, no crystal balls here. What I can say is that, you know, Raise Up, if something does not happen this session, we are committed to the long-term fight here, whether it's a legislative fight or whether it's a fight to take it to the ballot. And, you know, to do what's necessary to do that, which is, you know, we have no problem going out and collecting the 130, 140,000 signatures. We've done that many times. And we have no problem, you know, pushing to raise money and to do things necessary to do it. But it would be much easier to do it through the legislature. And I think that, you know, it made sense, given where we were coming out of the Fair Share Amendment, that we needed time to, you know, basically take care and move forward in a way that made sense for us.
Have you felt like Raise Up's priorities have been reflected, not just kind of among the voting populace, but also with the new administration? The last time the minimum wage was raised, obviously it's a prior gubernatorial administration that has something to do with the governor, something to do with the legislature, something to do with organizing. But how are those pieces fitting together right now in terms of Raise Up's priority areas?
Well, I think in some areas, in terms of implementation of fair share, the governor has done a good job of protecting the fair share revenue and ensuring that it goes to, you know, programs as constitutionally mandated. We would love for all the elected officials to give Raise Up more credit. And when they talk about how great something is, to actually say that this funding comes from the Fair Share Amendment. But we'll bask in our own glory. And we know, and our members know, and the organizations that are here know that we were able to do that, which was an incredible victory, and that we were able to make hundreds of thousands of phone calls, et cetera. As to minimum wage, we'll wait and see, you know, that we're working through the process and remains to be seen how it all plays out.
And I think we'll end on a version of where we started, which is where it would have kept us relative to other states to have a $15 minimum wage, where would a $20 minimum wage end up putting us compared to most of the country? Would that be enough to make us somewhat of a leader, or would that just kind of keep us keeping up?
I think leadership is kind of goes back and forth. Like California leads now, like Connecticut's leading right now in our area. I think it would put us in a leadership role for a certain period of time. But, you know, inflation is what it is. And this is a movement that is, you know, a national movement and takes place in different phases in different states. So it would put us ahead of where we are today, would ensure that, especially assuming we win indexing to inflation, that we would not be coming back to the legislature every 2, 3, 4 years, and that we would be able to work on other things that are equally important to minimum wage. So it would put us in a consistent increase, which would be really important. And it also, the way our legislation is written, would cover employees who had actually been excluded, some public sector employees who had been excluded in other areas. So our legislation would be a major step forward for the Commonwealth and a major step forward for the people who live here, especially workers who are struggling to survive.
Thanks again to Enid Eckstein for joining me on the podcast. Thank you for listening. I'm Jennifer Smith. Our producer is John Gee. Leave a rating and review wherever you're hearing this now if you want to help other people find us, and email podcast@commonwealthbeacon.org if you ever want to get in touch directly. We'll be back next week.